It's beautiful.
It is. Ah, family heirloom. I thought you'd appreciate it.
I do.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging E.T. in general out in the middle of nowhere?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
Was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. The folks around called him Six Gun Joe. Worked with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating UFOs. Out for a drive with a gal one night, they stopped to check out the reporting site. When an alien lit right there on the ground, commenced to throw in his weight around. Now, old Six Gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Especially without Vaseline or anything like that, you know. Seriously. Well, Six Gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, any last wish before you die, y'all? Reach for his gun, quick as a twitch, and said, fill your claw, you son of a bitch. Now, a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Joe Montaldo Show. Hope everybody's having a great evening, great morning, great afternoon, wherever you are on our gorgeously beautiful blue planet. I say this every week, there's nowhere else I want to be on Wednesday night, but right here hanging out with y'all. I almost preempted this show tonight to cover some other news that's been going on in the world, but I decided to leave it for Friday and Saturday. I'm sure Jason and Heather will pick up on some of it Friday, and Stephanie and I will cover it on Saturday as well. I mean, there's a lot going on, and frankly, the events of the last few days have kind of hacked me off, but not really a good topic matter for this. We may start up, as a matter of fact, I was talking with Stephanie yesterday about we may add a half an hour, an hour news show after this show, starting in a couple weeks, just for the middle of the week news, because there's stuff that Stephanie and I keep for the show, but because there's so much news at the end of the week, a lot of times we don't get a chance to go back over the material. So we may start doing some of the week. We'll see. One thing at a time. One little baby lovely step at a time. And we'll go to that. Jennifer, yes, I actually will put the cam on in a little while. I'm just kind of preoccupied with something else at the moment. But thanks for asking. A lot of stuff going on tonight. Also, before we get into anything else, we're going to be talking. We're going to have some audio clips planned tonight and a couple other things going on tonight. But before we get into something else, and I will repeat this on Saturday's show because this is actually news for Saturday night shows. Hopefully Stephanie ain't listening. She's going to hurt me. I love this. Sea plankton discovered outside of space station. Now, it's the Russian scientists, and they found that, you know, they were testing the surfaces outside the space station, and they found plankton and other microorganisms in space. So first thing they ruled out that it couldn't have been brought there by one of the launches. It's not the right kind of plankton for the area, blah, blah, blah. This type of plankton is in full bloom in the middle of the ocean. So what they think is happening, that there's a wind current coming off the ocean going into space and depositing this on the collectors of the space station. But that's not the best part. This stuff isn't dying. It's staying alive and it's growing. So it really kind of changes our perception of space, vacuum, radiation, and weightlessness considerably. You know, this is a significant find. I mean, it will change the whole entire way we view how life gets from one planet to another. It will give panspermia the biggest boost it's ever needed, because basically if living organisms can be swept into space and stay alive and manage to get to other planets, of course they can grow and thrive. But more importantly, it also suggests if the planet struck or if there's a big volcano and a lot of these materials are deposited in space, that this life can stay alive even on reentry and survive in other worlds. It really, really changes the concept of space. And the fact that anything can live in a vacuum really makes us have to change the way we view life. Remember, we're basing life on us. If we've got things growing in space that are from Earth, no less, we're talking about plankton, which is crucial to the life cycle of this planet. I mean, it produces oxygen, it feeds a good chunk of the animals in the ocean. It's something without plankton, the world would be a much different place. First off, the oxygen levels would be much lower. There'd be much less people on the planet. There'd be much less abundance of life in the oceans. It would just be a much different place. So it's interesting to me to see that this stuff can be carried aloft by winds, which they don't know for sure yet. I don't want anybody writing to me or calling me about this. They don't know for sure, but that's what they're thinking's happened, that it's being brought aloft by wind. It says something, a lot of things, actually. It's a great article. You should catch it. All you got to do is type in plankton in space or plankton on the space station. It'll come right up. It's a great thing to go look at, and it's just good science read. Don't jump to any conclusions about it yet. Take a good read on it. Wait to see what the next set of experiments are going to be. But no, if it turns out and holds true, it's a substantial change in the way we're going to view the universe. It's really going to change the way we view the universe and how life can go out throughout the universe and exist. It was funny because I was reading through the article this morning, and I was on, I think I was on Yahoo Chat or something, and I kept seeing these little young guys posting, well, I wonder if the whales could swim around and eat the plankton, which, of course, is funny. Maybe space whales, maybe some kind of science, sci-fi whale or something, but I don't think ours can. Yes, it's alive. The plankton, it's not just plankton. They found other microorganisms alive on the space station surface. I'm sure it's clinging to the surface of the space station, but it is alive, and it's more than just plankton. So this is just stuff you're really not there's a group I go hang out over there every once in a while with, a contactee group that a friend of mine runs, that when he opens it, I go hang out every once in a while. It goes back to the old days when we used to have UFO alien phenomena on Yahoo Chat. But now the support group's on Pal Talk Chat, so it's a different place. But anyway, enough about all that. I just thought it was something interesting that people might want to check into and look into. You know, I get a lot of UFO sightings every week, which are cool. I mean, I like when people send them to me. They're good reads, and I have a lot of fun with them. I mean, it doesn't really change anything. What I really like yesterday or day before yesterday, I had gotten a couple of contactees had written to me about weird things going on in their life. And what was funny about it, within, 12 hours, 15 hours, I got about 7 or 8 UFO reportings in the general vicinity of where these two people live. So I thought that was interesting. What does it mean? It's just a correlation to the abduction cases
you know, somebody seeing the UFOs, more than likely contactees. I mean, that's probably what it was. It's probably contactees. But we're going to start off with tonight. Now, probably the second hour, we're going to be doing the Betty and Barney Hill case. We're going to be playing some of the original Hypnosis. Somewhere in one of my other hard drives, I got the original 9 or 10 they did with. These have probably been edited and put on YouTube, but I've got the originals somewhere in one of my databases I had gotten from a young lady when I first got into the field. She actually sent me physical, well, she made me disc copies and sent them to me, which was really sweet and really cool of her. I love when people help out because it made it good. But I had transferred them all onto computers. And from time to time, I back them up on different hard drives. So I got to go hunt it down and see what hard drive's on. But I just seen it about 2-3 weeks ago, so I know it's around somewhere. That, and I've seen some of David Jacobs' tapes with, what's her name? What was the girl he was having the affair with? Or I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. The whatever that disaster was. I found those just a little while ago, actually. Maybe if we got time. Emma Woods. Maybe we'll play some of the Emma Woods tapes at the end of the show if time permits. But let's get down to this. You know, this is kind of weird to me. Hold on. Oh, about to play y'all the wrong thing. Look at that. We'd have had to change the whole topic line there. Let's go see. Where do we have it at? Okay, yes. This is George Van Tassel, 1964, Rare UFO Research Classic, okay? This is the interview, if I believe right, if I remember my thing, the original air date of this interview was June 18th, 1964. The recording is from KVOS Channel 12 Film Center from the Pacific Northwest Studios, Western Washington University, Bellingham, what is that, Washington, okay. Anyway, we wanted to get this down. This, you know, I know a lot of y'all are familiar with Van Tassel and a lot of not. Whether you agree or disagree, we're going to play this. Anytime I can get anything in people's own words, I prefer to do it that way. We'll play this out, let it play. It's about 20, 25 minutes. We may stop halfway, take a little break, talk a little bit, and we may just let it play out. We'll see how it goes, and we'll see how bad the recording is. I don't want to kill y'all with this recording here. So hold on, ladies and gentlemen, I will turn you over. This is Joe Montaldo, Somewhere in Time.
By disappearing and reappearing at will in your very presence, in front, if necessary, of many witnesses, and who land on this materialistic earth in flying saucers, to which you, if you're one of the chosen, shall enter through an anti-gravity elevator. Nothing to hold you up. You just whisk up into the body of the flying saucer, a scout ship from outer space. No way. I'm not really joking. Because I've got a man now, here and now, one of the men who claims fervently that he has met these people from outer space, has talked to them, and has been given secrets of things such as a time machine from men from outer space. You'll meet this man after this plebeian and earthly message. The man you're going to meet in a moment or two, Tassel, from Giant Rock, California, is a most unlikely person to claim to have seen flying saucers and been in touch with people from outer space. George is a very ordinary fellow. He doesn't make any money out of his flying saucer beliefs, but boy, he really believes them. And before I start talking to George, I want to tell you, too, that I do have a couple of doubts in my mind. We all see these newspaper reports from Socorro, New Mexico, that a mysterious craft landed and took off and left blast marks in the sand. Airline pilots from time to time talk delicately about strange aircraft circling their normal aircraft in flight, perhaps even cutting off the power of their engines momentarily. We all love to talk about the mysterious and the unknown and the flying saucers. So now it's to George Van Tassel and this question. Time machine you're building down in California. Would Jack, this was the result of a formula which was given to me by a man who landed a ship at my airport in 1953. And we put this formula under research, tested a number of experiments on a bench in a good electronics lab in Chicago, and we produced phenomenal results with evidence that we should do it on a larger scale in order to be able to do more with it. And this evolved out of something that started in 1953 into a four-story high machine that we're working on down there today.
Now, George, I don't care whether the machine is four stories high or 40 stories high or 4 inches high. When I say calmly and unexcitedly, a time machine, what does your formula tell you you can do with a time machine?
Well, Jack, our formula has no time factor, which electronic formula does have. And on the other hand, electronic science has only had two dimensions to work with, the electric pattern and the magnetic pattern perpendicular to it. And we discovered a third zone, which we call a time zone, and we are working through this zone with an effort to orient the magnetic field to give us other results than our science can obtain at present.
George, just double talk to me. A time machine means to me a little box that I can go into and go back 5,000 years or forward 10,000 years. Is that what your formula tells you you can do?
Well, Jack, this isn't a little box. This is a four-story machine focusing fields that we can orient to produce this zone big enough for a man to get into. It isn't a box.
But what happens to the man when he gets into the zone?
I'm all
agog with curiosity.
Jack, we've discovered this zone is subject to thought. Now, since time doesn't record events the way we do on calendars and clocks, you could only record an event by thinking of it. Now, theoretically, we believe we can take a videotape magnetic camera into the time zone and photograph Lincoln's Gettysburg Address or Caesar's armies marching or anything that's ever happened.
All right, let me get this straight. In other words, you're telling me, like H.G. Wells imagined 50 years ago, that everything that happened in time is still there to be seen by the recreation electronically of a thought which exists.
Jack, you know how you talk into a tape on a tape recorder and play the interruptions back, identical to the play that you made. The Earth's magnetic field is the same way. You can put interruptions into it and play them back out of it. An associate of ours in creating a magnetic coupler with this principle coupled in the Earth's magnetic field and played back TV shows from stations that aren't even in business anymore.
You mean that an experiment has been done to bring out of the air television programs which have been and gone?
Been and gone.
Now, where was this experiment conducted?
It was conducted in Santa Monica by an associate of mine.
Why hasn't this hit the headlines throughout the world? That's a time machine in action. If
well,
I can...
Jack, the reason it hasn't hit the world is because, as I understand it now, the Navy Department took him and the research over because he also discovered he could bounce magnetic echoes off the ionosphere and locate submarines under the ocean, regardless of where they were.
So who is this associate of yours?
This is a fellow named Charlie Arts.
Charlie Arts?
Yeah.
And is he a free man walking around today?
Well, he's free where he is in this super-secret research he's conducting.
Now, so therefore, you tell me soberly in front of the television camera that things, old television programs, have been recreated out of nothing.
Played back with a picture and the sound just as good as the day they were broadcast. We've done this many times.
Why didn't you bring one up with you?
Well, this requires quite a piece of apparatus. This magnetic coupler works on around 50,000 volts, and it doesn't have any radio frequency connected with it. And actually, the television set which plays back the picture doesn't even have an antenna connected to it.
George, you know as well as I do, and you've been on television 350 times, and I've known you. I met you once 7 years ago, and I kind of like you.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what the people out there are saying. They're saying this man's a nut.
Well, Jack, you know when Fulton was running his steamboat up the Hudson River, there were people still standing on the bank saying it couldn't be done.
Well, then, let me take you back, though. You have a time machine plan. You have done experiments which show you can bring the past to life. Where did this formula come from?
I love that Scotch accent. Jack, the formula came from a ship that landed at my airport in 1953 on August the 24th, which had four people aboard it that came from another planet.
I'm breathless.
Well, you're not only breathless, I was breathless.
But I'm cynical, too.
Well, that's fine. That's the way to be. In fact, I'm a bigger skeptic than you are of many things.
I'm an unbeliever. Convince me that this really happened to you.
Well, this thing is very similar to a thing that happened in our biblical records where a Lord presented Moses with a pattern to build a tabernacle. They came out of the sky, they handed him stone tablets, and this phenomena that's taking place today is as old as our history, as our civilization. This isn't anything new that's occurring. It's something that's being continued in another time of crisis when conditions affecting the people of this planet are reaching a point where somebody has to take care of the situation.
Now, I don't intend in any way to be disrespectful or blasphemous, but do you feel, and I know you're not an evangelistic type, do you feel that you're some kind of Moses receiving a new word?
Well, I don't say that, Jack. I say that what is occurring now has occurred before. There's many records of these ships landing throughout history, clear back into Sanskrit. And there are records in the 1898 Chicago newspapers that covered the front page for 3 days of a big ship setting over Chicago. When you realize we're dealing with a type of man that is as, almost as far above us in intelligence as we are above the lower animals, there isn't anything phenomenal in this at all.
Now, you say casually, because this is your life's work now, ships. Now, you mean flying saucer, don't you?
Well, a flying saucer was a name the press put on this thing. And actually, what they termed a flying saucer was nothing but a scout ship from the big carriers.
But I want to go back to that night in 1953. Tell me, where did this happen for people who haven't had your talk or seen you yet?
It happened on my airport, which I've operated for the last 16 years, at Giant Rock Airport, 17 miles north of Yucca Valley in California, or 40 miles north of Palm Springs.
Now, this is a private airport for small aircraft, is it?
This is an airport used both by the military and private aircraft.
You own this airport, do you?
I lease this airport from the United States government. I've operated it for 16 years since I retired from the flight test business and the aviation.
Right now. How old are you now, by the way, John?
I'm 54, Jack. Got three grown daughters, married, and 11 grandchildren.
You don't mind if I ask you the stock question? I know that you've been asked every obnoxious question that can ever have been asked. You've never been treated for any form of emotional upset.
I've never had an emotional upset other than women.
Except that night in Yucca Flats, not Yucca Flats, a Giant Rock, when this ship appeared. Now, give me the details, George, because I'm never tired of hearing the details of a man who says he has seen creatures from another world.
Well, actually, Jack, this was as simple as crossing a street and getting hit by a car. After it's over, you're the victim of the circumstance. And I didn't see the ship land. One of my son-in-laws, that wasn't my son-in-law at that time, saw it come down. Another man on the airport heard it, and he wasn't where he could see it. And the man got off of the ship and approached me before I even knew there was a ship down.
Where were you then? What time of day or night was it?
It was 2 o'clock in the morning and approximately a full moon, which is like daylight on the desert.
Were you walking about outside or what?
No, I was sound asleep when he awakened me.
This man awakened you?
Well, something awakened me.
So you got up out of your bed?
I got out of my bed and went aboard the ship at his request.
This man, in what language did he converse with you?
He talked to me in the best English equivalent to Ronald Coleman.
And he met you there and he said, what did he say, come with me to my ship or what?
No, he said, I asked him what he wanted because we have a lot of people who come in stuck in the sand and broken axles and whatnot. And I asked him what he wanted and he said, my name is Solgonda and I would be pleased to show you our craft.
Solgonda?
Solgonda.
Was the craft visible to you at this time?
It was when he stated this. I saw beyond him the ship, which I hadn't seen before.
What did you see?
A bell-shaped type of anti-gravity ship that they operate as a scout ship out of their big carriers.
How big?
This was 36 feet in diameter and 19 feet high.
And where was it, on the ground?
No, it was hovering 10 feet off the ground.
And how did you go into this ship?
I walked with him to a spot underneath it, and an anti-gravity beam took me up through a hole in the bottom of it.
You're telling me at 2 o'clock in the morning in Giant Rock Airport, you walked underneath this hovering ship, and whammo, you went up inside.
No, you didn't go whammo. You went just about as slow as a local elevator run.
And when you got off the anti-gravity elevator, what did it look like?
I was inside of a ship about 18 feet in diameter and roughly 10 feet high to the domed ceiling. And there were three men on the ship, besides the one that had got off and invited me aboard.
You keep calling them men. What do you mean, men?
Well,
little green men?
They were about 5'6". They came about to my eyebrows, and they could have walked in our clothes down any of our streets, and we wouldn't have paid any attention to them.
And did you bring any proof off that ship? Were you alone in the ship?
I was alone with the three men until the other fellow came up behind me, and then the four of them were aboard.
Were there any other earthly eyewitnesses to this?
Nothing, only outside of the ship.
And these people stayed outside?
On the airport.
And did you go anywhere in this ship?
Not to my knowledge. When I got off, it was the same place it was when I got on.
Well, what do you mean, not to your knowledge? Had the door closed when you went in or something?
I don't know, because it was below the deck.
And did these people tell you where they came from?
They didn't say where they came from, but I've been in the air game since 1927, and their instruments were unlike anything I'd ever seen before.
Well, don't give me technicalities. What was different?
The difference was that we used dial instruments, and they used vertical instruments, like fluorescent tubes with marks on them.
What color were these people?
The instruments were marked in symbols similar to hieroglyphics. They were not in any language or number system we use on the Earth.
What color were these people?
They looked like they were white people with a good, healthy tan.
Did they give you any indication of how old they were, or what they ate, or where they came from at all?
After we got off the ship, the man who invited me aboard, who didn't look a day over 28 years of age, told me that he was over 700 years of age in our time.
Oh, come off it, George.
That's right.
Was this the guy who gave you the formula for the time machine?
That's the man.
And what form did the formula take? Did he implant it in your mind by telepathy, or did he give you something written in English?
He spoke it to me verbally.
And you remembered this?
There's nothing to it to remember.
Will you tell me now? The formula for a time machine.
F equals 1 over T.
F equals 1 over T.
F being frequency and T being time.
And this enables me to go back to the time of Caesar's armies conquering Britain.
Well, it would enable a mathematician to work this out, yes.
And why hasn't this been acclaimed like Einstein's E equals MC squared?
Well, why hasn't the fact that the United States government's been flying anti-gravity ships since 1956 been acclaimed? Or the fact that there's a crater on the moon with a base in it since 1954, we've known this.
All right, but let's get, first of all, the U.S. Why haven't the FBI clapped you incommunicado for breaking secrets that they want to keep secret in the United States?
Well, possibly because they know this information's going to get out eventually anyway, and what I say won't make any difference.
Now, that particular night when you had this experience, did you call the police? Did you call the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the White House?
Well, I'm 17 miles from the nearest phone, Jack, and the nearest phone would get me to the sheriff's office, and it'd take them about 40 minutes to get out there.
Well, wouldn't you have a phone on an airport?
No, we have no phone.
But you're an operating airport.
Well, we're an operating airport, but we're isolated in the middle of the desert, 17 miles from the closest town, and they've never run phones out there.
So how do you communicate with people who want to use your airport?
They fly in or write, and phone to the local town where my daughter lives, and she notifies us when she comes out.
Now, you talked about a crater in the moon. Now, I thought all the moon stuff had been debunked and that nobody ever really knows what goes on the moon. What's this?
Well, this is the Gassendi Crater. This is 55 miles long and oval-shaped. It's in the Mare Humorum Sea, or on the edge of it. Since 35 years ago, they wondered why this particular crater had these lines in it. And with the magnification, which you can get with a larger telescope, this is what they found. These lines are tubes laying on the surface of this crater and running under some of the mountain ridges. There are three large dome-shaped structures in here. These tubes run clear outside of the crater, and we know there are tubes laying on the surface because the sun is shining from this angle, and this mountain peak causes this shadow.
What does it all mean? Does it mean that this is a rocket launching or a flying saucer base on the moon?
This has been a base on the moon for perhaps many thousands of years, used by these people in the spaceships to resupply their ships or whatever is required.
Not even Life magazine has accepted this as genuine, or has it?
Well, the Palomar Observatory people that took the picture won't even comment on it, so...
There must be a great conspiracy of silence to keep George Van Tassel's secret of the universe away from the people.
No, it isn't to keep anything I know away from the people. It's to keep many things away from the people.
Let's talk about this picture.
This is
the time machine.
This is a picture of the machine we're building down there. This structure is actually up. We're working now on the parts on the equipment that operate it. This rim around here has armatures 57 feet in diameter, which will be better than four times bigger than the biggest armatures ever made before.
But is that the place where you did the experiments? By the way, how old were these television programs you pulled back out of time and space?
Well, the oldest one was 6 years back because television was 6 years old when this was done.
And what program was it? Do you remember?
I don't remember what program, but I know that on checking up on some of the stations that Art found that the station no longer existed. It was out of business.
Let's get down to some more basics now. Are you making a lucrative living out of traveling around the world, evangelizing for flying saucers?
No, Jack, I'm on a vacation to rest my wife because she's been 2 years in a 40-seat restaurant without a rest. More than anything else, and I enjoy these particular things as a sideline. I make my living on the airport, and this research is something that I've got more money into than anybody else and more contribution to it. 5 years of intensive research without any pay. We donated 10 acres of land with a well worth $23,000, and we formed this corporation for the purpose of building up and investigating this basic material.
All right, now how long is it going to take you to get your time machine in operation?
Well,
I mean, it all sounds so crazy. You must admit, I believe there are some odd things, George, but I find it hard to credit because I wasn't there myself, your own experiences.
Well, it took them around 8 years to grind the mirror for the 200-inch telescope, and the first cyclotron was something like 11 years in the progress of building.
But that cost millions, George. You haven't got millions, billions
no,
it cost.
No, we don't have the overhead, the draft from the engineers and people sitting around the payroll. All of our effort on this is voluntary by many people in technical fields that contribute their effort to the project.
They all believe in flying saucers?
They all believe in flying saucers.
You obviously believe totally in flying saucers.
Yeah.
Because of that one, does your wife believe in flying saucers?
Well, I don't know very many people that don't. It's as obvious as believing in heaven or afterlife or anything else. You have certain things you believe in life. You believe there's air we breathe, yet you don't see it. We fly airplanes on it. And this is an intangible. We can measure it.
But why should these people come down, these from outer space, why don't they land in the White House or in Kremlin Square in Moscow and say, hey, listen to us, we can tell you a few things. We're 700 years old. We can travel through space. We're not concerned with time differentials.
Well, probably they're not concerned with giving us too much of their information because we'd only use it in our battle to destroy each other here.
Did these four men tell you that themselves?
No, they didn't tell me that, but this is a reasonable assumption on our part that the world's divided in two camps, each capable of eliminating old civilization, and if we were to go to another planet and observe this condition, we would certainly be a little cautious about who we talked to or what we revealed.
Yeah, but you yourself, was that the only experience you had? Mind you, that's 11 years ago in 1953, George.
That's right.
When you claimed to me that you went up in this elevator into the spaceship, I met the guy who spoke like Ronald Coleman. Was that your only contact with the...
That was the only contact I had with the people from the ship.
Did you have any? Have you had any other contacts with people?
I've had a recent contact last September, 1963.
Well, I don't have to ask you. Tell me.
Well, in this case, they drove a car into the airport. They didn't come in a ship. They're walking among us on the earth all the time, and we don't realize it.
I'm breathless. They. How many was they?
The they in the ship was four men.
They in the car?
The man that came in, there was a man came in by himself in September.
Well, you'll be telling me he had Martian license plates on the car.
No. They drove a standard American Cadillac.
And what did they want with you in 1963, 10 years later?
They gave me some more information pertinent to electronic magnetic research.
But how did you know they were from some mysterious place in outer space?
You don't know unless they want you to know, and then they'll demonstrate some thing that they can do that we can't do, that's humanly impossible for us to do.
What did they demonstrate to you which convinced you, an apparently sober, sensible, balanced person who nevertheless believes in flying saucers, that convinced you they were unearthly people?
Well, they demonstrated the ability in front of 19 people sitting in a lounge, for instance, that they could sit there and disappear before your eyes and reappear. In fact, the man did this three times.
For you and your friends?
For 19 witnesses that were sitting in our lounge.
Vanished in front of your eyes?
Sit right there in a chair like you're there, and then you're not there, and then you're back there. He did this three times.
Now, I'm going to disappear, but purely for 1 minute, for this message. The previous foregoing interview with George Van Tassel of Giant Rock Airport, California, was not, I must stress, presented to you as a scientific examination of George's claims. There are so many holes in George's claims, even to the layman like myself, that one is bound to be, how shall I put it, a trifle cynical. For instance, why didn't George keep one of the men with him to produce a living proof, and then we could have checked medically his heart and lungs and everything else about him to try and substantiate the claim that he is 700 Earth years of age? And why didn't he at least tell George where they came from? Or why didn't he at least present George with some physical, concrete proof so that people wouldn't regard him with suspicion and skepticism as someone who was perhaps just a little bit, you know, overly easily convinced, perhaps by some form of hallucination? But he did tell us one thing, how to recognize visitors from outer space. If they ever come to you and you're sitting in a room and they snap their fingers three times and disappear, and when they reappear a few seconds later, then you'll know for sure that they are from outer space. Thank you and good night.
Well, welcome back, y'all. That was an interesting interview. you know, I like playing stuff like this because it was a different mentality back then. I mean, this was in the summer of 64. This was around the same time with Betty and Barney Hill fever and all that. It's one of the reasons we're going to play the Hill stuff in a little while. It was all around the same time. He's describing some different type of human type aliens. Not really much what I've heard before, but interesting. The Bell type craft I have heard about before, before him and after him, by the way. It seems to pop up in ancient history from time to time, and it seems to pop up in today's society from time to time, and everywhere in between it is some type of probe ship. I would agree with that as well. Whether he is telling the truth or not, you can't really tell from that interview. The man rarely even blinked the entire interview. I liked the interviewer myself. I thought the host did a good job. He was kind of funny and still asking decent questions, trying to kind of hold his feet to the fire, which is always nice to see in an interview. So, but it was fun, and what do y'all think? I mean, Van Tassel, George Van Tassel, real, not real, fake, not fake, maybe a contactee that was misunderstood, maybe right place, wrong time, right place. Limited contact. You know I don't believe in just one-time contact, so what do you think it was? I find it kind of cute, to be honest with you. Next, I believe this is a clip from Carl Sagan we're going to be playing here. Hold on. And, you know, I do like Carl Sagan. Now, this is dealing with the Betty and Barney Hill case. This is. So hold on. Let me cue this up and we'll be right back.
Deeper and deeper, deeper asleep, far asleep. Deeper and deeper, fully relaxed, all muscles are relaxed, you're comfortable, relaxed. You will not be anxious or distressed, but you will remember everything and you will tell me everything.
Yes. I think I will stop. I will stop. And I have not stopped. And Betty said, look, there's a star moving. And I look and I see a star. Funny. But I said, Betty, that's a satellite. We are seeing a satellite. And then I pulled over to the side of the road. And Betty jumped off her side, on her side, with the binoculars. And I got the chain. And I hooked it to the dog on her collar. And I said, come on, Dobson. Let's get out. She jumps out. And I look toward the sky, and I look back to Dousey, and walk her around the trunk of the car. And I'm saying, hurry up, Betty, so I can get a look. And Betty passes the binoculars to me. And I see that this is not a satellite. It is an airplane. It is an airplane. You can see, I think, you can see the rows of windows. And it is an airplane, and I tell Betty this, and give the binoculars back to her, and I am satisfied, and I drive, and Betty is still looking, and she says, Barney, that is not a plane, it is still following us. And I stop and I look and I see it is still out there, off in the distance. So I search for a place to pull off the road. And I see a dirt road to the right of the main highway. And I think this is a good place I can pull off. And if any car comes, it won't strike me. And I am thinking, this is strange, because it is still there. And Betty said, I think she said, I am mad with her, I said, I believe Betty is trying to make me think this is a flying saucer.
Atmos.
Was it light enough to see in the
was just a light moving in the sky, and I heard no noise. And I think this is ridiculous. And Betty, it is not a flying saucer. What are you doing that for? You want to believe in this thing, and I don't. And I can't hear any sound.
No sound, whatever.
I want to hear a jet. Oh, I want to hear a jet so badly.
Why do you want to hear a jet?
Because Betty is making me mad. She is making me angry. Because she is saying, look at that. It's strange. It's not a plane. Look at it. And I keep thinking it's got to be. And I want to hear a hum. I want to hear a motor.
How far away was it?
It wasn't far. It was about 1,000 feet, I guess.
1,000 feet.
1,000 feet.
Did it go back and forth, or did it go in circles like a plane does?
It would go toward the west. And without looking as if it turned, it would come straight back. It would go like I think of a paddle and a ball with a rubber. And you hit the ball, and the ball goes straight out and comes straight back about a circle. And I think only a jet could fly that fast. And I am hoping I can find a good place where I can stop and really see this thing, whatever it is. And I see a wigwam, and I recognize this place, and I feel safe. Yes, and the barren hostility.
What is this place?
What an area.
What is this place?
It is Indian Head. I have been there before, and I feel comforted. But I see a familiar place. And I think I will get a good look at this, because Betty was very annoying. She was annoying by telling me to look, and I can't look. I have to drive the car. I want to wake up.
You're not going to wake up. You're in a deep sleep, you're comfortable, relaxed, this is not going to trouble you. Go on. You can remember everything now.
It's right over my right. God. What is it? And I try to maintain control so Betty cannot tell I am scared. God, I'm scared.
It's all right. You can go right on. Experience it. It will not hurt you now.
I got to get my gun.
Oh! I got my gun! All right.
see. I guess now.
Oh, Lord.
You forgot
now.
You've forgotten. Calm now. Relax. Deeply relax. Deeply relaxed. You will not have to make any outcry. But you can...
Is that what they call a cliffhanger? That was not actually the clip that was meant to be played. That clip is meant to be played at the second part of that. We got four more going with it, I believe. So we will be, when we come back from the break, we will play that as well. What do y'all think? You heard his voice under hypnosis. What do you think? I mean, this is a very well-educated audience listens to this show. I know there's a lot of researchers listening to the show. You know, I've done this half a dozen times over the years, played some of the regression tapes, played some of the old 70s radio shows that they were on. And the reason why I do this is for the same reason. I had seen Matters Patters had posted something in a room about Stevensville earlier. And this is the main reason why I always like to replay old stuff, because I've noticed over the years, especially in the field, things have a tendency to change. If you go read the original book from the Hills and then you read the last two, you'll see there's a progression, like from the pull-down map to a digital, more state-of-the-art technology. In the end, let me put it this way. Advanced aliens technology is not like ours, okay? They're not going to have screens like we do. Most of the technology is just not going to be ours because, frankly, it's just more advanced than us. So it probably takes on different forms or different things. You know, most of the time when I hear the different aliens, I mean the different contactees talk about aliens, they talk about telepathic interfaces with the ship. So there's no need for computer screens. It's in your damn head. And that's the whole point. You can access a ship anywhere from any point in the ship at any time and not need certain types of physical instrumentation or certain types of screens. Those would be more along the lines for us or people who are not used to doing it the other way. So you've always got to be skeptical when you start hearing these types of scenarios. Most of what I've heard the Hills describe and most of the tapes I've listened to and most of the radio encounters I've listened to, I would consider to be conventional technologies. You know, like the different types of medical scans and stuff like that. There's a tape, I don't know if it's in this group, where Barney's describing two different times. He describes the humans and then he describes what we would call aliens. I think it's in this one, in these sets. But we're going to find out. But this next clip, we've got to get a break here real soon, but let me grab this next clip. This is the one I wanted to play right here. So hold on, ladies and gents, and I will turn you.
There must be other civilizations far older and more advanced than ours. So shouldn't we have been visited? Shouldn't there be every now and then alien ships in the skies of Earth? There's nothing impossible in this idea, and no one would be happier than me if we were being visited. But has it happened in fact? What counts is not what sounds plausible, not what we'd like to believe, not what one or two witnesses claim, but only what is supported by hard evidence, rigorously and skeptically examined. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Since 1947, there have been hundreds of thousands of reports of UFOs, unidentified flying objects. This subject has more, I think, to do with religion and superstition than with science. Let's consider one of the most famous accounts of a supposed encounter with alien beings. On September 19, 1961, an American couple were driving home through New Hampshire.
What's the matter, Chelsea?
They were returning along a lonely road late at night from a vacation in Canada. Remember, we have only their word for what happened next.
No, I don't. There must be a reasonable explanation.
They had observed, so they said, a strange moving light in the sky. By definition, an unidentified flying object. It seemed to follow them for miles.
What's the matter with that dog? I don't know.
After a time, the lighting patterns on the UFO changed. It appeared to land.
What the?
It blocked the road, preventing them from driving on. They said they saw mouthless creatures approaching, who were not exactly human.
Barney? Barney? Barney, what is that?
At this point, the story becomes still stranger. They lost all recollection of what happened in the next few hours. But weeks later, they said, they recalled some details and discussed the experience with others. 26 months later, under hypnosis, they reported that a UFO had landed and that the crew had emerged. They were captured, they said, and taken aboard the craft. What makes it so special? That was the story told by Betty Barney Hill.
Betty had noticed
virtually all scientists who've studied it are skeptical. Writing. But UFO enthusiasts think the Hill case is a classic example of a glowing pattern close encounter of the third kind. Why? What makes it so special?
Dots connected with lines. It was, they told her, a star map displaying the routes of interstellar commerce. Afterwards, the Hills were released and permitted to return home, or at least this is their story. Now, believers find this account compelling, or at least plausible, chiefly because of the alleged star map. Here's what Betty Hill said it looked like. Now, why would anybody take this seriously? Because here is a real map, widely publicized by UFO enthusiasts, of 15 selected nearby stars, including the Sun, as seen from one particular vantage point in space. This map includes stars that were first cataloged several years after Betty Hill recalled what she says she saw in the alien ship. Her map required, we are told, information that was not then available on the Earth. There is a resemblance between the two maps, but that's mainly because the lines corresponding to navigation routes have been copied from the Hill map onto the real star map. If we were to substitute some other set of lines for the Hill lines, we find that the eye suddenly is biased against seeing any agreement between the two maps at all. To make an objective test, however, let's remove the lines altogether. And then there's very little resemblance left. But these particular stars are selected from a large catalog of star positions. Our vantage point in space is also selected to make the best possible fit with the Hill map. If you can pick and choose from a large number of stars, viewed from any vantage point in space you want, you can always find something resembling the pattern you're looking for. I'm surprised that nobody could find a better fit to the Hill map. The Hills' own psychiatrist described their story as a kind of dream. There's no corroborating evidence. The star map argument is worthless. And yet, this is one of the best attested cases of UFO close encounters. For all I know, we may be visited by a different extraterrestrial civilization every second Tuesday. But there's no support for this appealing idea. the extraordinary claims are not supported by extraordinary evidence. There are curious...
Sorry, guys, I got a ton of links open. Anyway, we're going to stop right there. As you can see, Carl Sagan even thought the map was a joke, but I've been saying that for two decades. I still contest that Barty and Barney Hill was probably the first known MILAB case, first well-documented MILAB case that we know of. I really, truly think if there was an abduction, it happened in Canada. And I have to be honest about this. If they were contactees, I don't think Betty was. I do think Barney was the contactee. I have to be blunt about that. It's just stuff he says in the tapes. He's the one that gives the description of what we would consider the aliens today. Other stuff in his life, there's patterns in his life prior to even Betty of things that just fit to contactees that don't have therapy or someone to reach out to. I mean, a lot of it's just common stuff. It's nothing even bad. I mean, a lot of it's just, you know, you really need someone to talk to when you have this kind of stuff going on in your life. And he didn't. So, you know, the only thing you can do is, you know, mental institutions or psychologists, psychiatrists, things along those. And he was very well known for that. But also remember, he started out as a night clerk at the post office and then ended up getting to meet the president of the United States. Now, him and Betty were, you know, active in the rights community. And that's why he got to meet the president. Do you really think that we're going to let someone who says they were abducted by aliens meet the president of the United States? That's just fishy in itself, really. I mean, that really is really fishy in itself. But anyway, we're going to stop right there. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in about 8 to 10 minutes. I want everyone to please stay tuned to the Joe Montalvo Show. We will be bringing up some of this Carl Sagan stuff. We will also be bringing up some more of the hypnosis with Betty and Barney Hill. And the last half hour, the last 20 minutes or something, we will try to open the phone lines to get anybody's questions or comments they may have and what they've been listening tonight. We may run a little over to discuss some of the other stuff we've heard. It's just good for people to hear this for themselves. You're not getting my opinion. You're not getting Kathleen Waldron's opinion. You're not getting anybody's opinion. You're just getting what was said. And you can form your own opinion. But anyway, let me take us to break and we'll be right back.
If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select Other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello, this is Angela Thomas with a message about living life to the fullest. As a psychic clairvoyant, I often give insights to one's career path, financial situation, or relationship. Whether one is happy or not in their current situation, where he or she is right now is an important part of learning valuable lessons that can lead to fulfilling one's life purpose. If I can offer you insights, feel free to contact me at 636-278-2272, again 636-278-2272, or visit my website, angelathomas.org. I'm considered a psychic, so I provide accurate and detailed psychic readings for individuals as well as groups. Remember, no matter what influences your life at the moment, live life to the fullest. Stay in gratitude, count your blessings, and prepare yourself for more opportunities around the corner. I'm Psychic Angela Thomas, and my website is angelathomas.org.
Tune in to The Mind Cemetery with your hosts, Chip and Nicole, every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway. mindcemetery.com.
The paranormal,
ghosts,
spirits,
demons,
reincarnation,
past lives,
the afterlife,
divination,
exorcisms,
witchcraft,
the unseen.
He's psychic medium Chris George.
And he's Victor the Voice Furman.
We are Second Sight Radio. Join us live
every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time
on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging E.T. in general out in the middle of nowhere?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
Was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. Folks around called him Six Gun Joe. Worked with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating UFOs. Out for a drive with a gal one night, they stopped to check out the reporting site. When an alien lit right there on the ground, commenced to throw in his weight around. Now, old Six Gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Especially without Vaseline or anything like that, you know. Seriously. Well, Six Gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, any last wish before you die, y'all? Reached for his gun, quick as a twitch, and said, fill your claw, you son of a bitch. Now, a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Yes, this is your host, Joe Montaldo. How are you all doing?
Yes, I'll kill you all. No, I'm just kidding. Hope everybody enjoyed the first hour. A lot of good information flowing out of there. Check it out and see what you can find. It will be available, you know, about 20 minutes after the show, so usually all the major archive sites have it up. I want everybody to kind of keep me up to speed on iTunes. We got two iTunes feeds now, one that comes off of SoundCloud, one that comes off of PodGarden. Podbean, I'm sorry. And PodGarden is another one. And we just like to know that they're working properly. And you're not going to be able to get the in-depth amount of archives you used to be because there's simply just not that many posted on the new servers. But I think we're up to 370 now on SoundCloud. So, there's about 370 archives available. I personally have way more than that myself, so eventually I'll get them up there. And I was thinking I'm going to try to republish some of Angela Joyner's stuff dealing with the Stevensville case. Just to have it republished. It's nice to keep people honest. How's that? And we'll do it like that. But I know that, and then I'll have to we've got it on the Hi8 tape, but the audio is so crappy because, I mean, you can hear everything. It's just so crappy. I hate to make it public. Joseph Renaud was recording that night on our Sony Hi8, which was great video, and the story is great. I mean, you can hear everything clear. It's just, there's a lot of noise, a lot of background noise, a lot of people drinking, fire roaring, wind blowing, stuff like that. So you get to hear everything, but it's kind of irritating at the same time. Unless you happen to be in there and you were hanging out with us and having a few beers and listening to the stories firsthand. It always amazes me how many stories change as time progresses on. Like, people tell me all the time, well, the Hills didn't have any military connections. Really? Really? They had a guy from, a colonel living with them or shacked up as a guest. They reported it to an Air Force major who was a personal friend of the family. Oh, no, they didn't have any military ties. Oh, no, the military couldn't possibly have known Barney was an abductee. And here's an interracial couple got to meet the president after they saw a UFO. Yeah, there's nothing funny going on in this case. I'll just keep believing that. But I got to say one thing. It got a lot of attention for the Hills in the press, and it kept it from being a race thing because it was an alien thing. So maybe it was the aliens' way of helping out the civil rights movement. I doubt it, but hey, if it works, it works. No telling what was going on back then, but for him to get to meet the president as an abductee is shocking and surprising to me because there ain't no contact he's getting around any presidents today. It's just not going to happen. So I have to say that it just seems a little bit fishy. And the fact that he has such a heavy Air Force tie. And everybody forgets Barney himself had been in and out of psychiatry since he was a young man. So, he had probably talked about these gray aliens before to other psychologists who may have been in the military or he may have told his military friends. But regardless, they had foreknowledge of what was coming. And I've always wondered why people like Kathleen Waldron and them fight this so hard, because it is a much more plausible explanation for what happened, especially given what is said in the Hill's own words. So, and it's hard to make people understand here when you have an alien abduction coupled with a military abduction, the memories tend to overlap. So you get mixes like, oh, well, they were swinging doors and we were getting physical exams, but there was a gray present. No, probably not. But it is, both were probably true. They just probably happened at different times. And then again, we know on some occasions the grays have been with the military, so you can't even rule that part of it out. But most of the technology they describe and the New Hampshire abduction is pretty much basic 101 government technology. Doesn't sound like anything extraterrestrial at all, or any of the technologies you hear today. Now, I believe we have one more Carl Sagan clip, and then we will return back to the Hill case. So let's go ahead and play this. Actually, we got two, I believe, and then we'll return back to the Hill case. We'll play another hypnosis clip, and then we'll come back and talk about that a little bit. So let's go ahead and clear this out.
There are curious daylight photos of UFOs. Some look suspiciously like hats or hubcaps thrown into the air. Photos can be faked. More common are unidentified lights at night. They're often aircraft. But if we can't identify a light, that doesn't make it a spaceship. Here's a movie of what you might think is a UFO. Actually, it's a piece of an asteroid burning up as it enters the Earth's atmosphere. Most reports of unidentified flying objects turn out to be something else, like the refracted image of a bright planet or the re-entry of an artificial satellite. Some are psychological aberrations, some are hoaxes. Never is there any compelling physical evidence, a detailed close-up photograph of a strange spacecraft or a small device of extraterrestrial manufacture or a book written in alien hieroglyphics. Never. There are reports of such things, but never the things themselves. The search for alien civilizations retains its importance despite the striking failure of the UFO evidence. Most astronomers, for example, consider extraterrestrial life a subject worthy of vigorous, if cautious, pursuit. For myself, I find something irresistible in the idea of discovering a token, maybe a simple inscription, which would provide the key to understanding an alien and exotic civilization. This is an appeal we humans have felt before.
Well, obviously, old Carl there did not think the hills were real. Or, for that matter, it doesn't sound like he thought many of these cases are real. You can't say I blame him. I mean, you know, we do find over the years that a good bunch of what's being reported is BS. Like the piece he's showing, the little clip he was showing was, I've seen that little clip of that hunk of meteor or that asteroid coming in many times. I've actually seen stuff like that coming in myself. Obviously, it's not a UFO. I mean, you can tell by the trajectory it's not an alien craft or a craft controlled by intelligent means, I should say. It's just not. I mean, it looks like space junk coming in. We've all seen enough space junk and stuff breaking up over, you know, like Skylab breaking up, the Soviet space station breaking up. We've seen enough crap break up and coming down that we now know that it doesn't look like it's intelligently controlled. Now, if it would stop, change directions, went up or down, that's a whole different thing. But that's not what went on. So I see his point of view on this. It's just, and I'm glad he is, or was, because he's passed away now. I should say I'm glad he was at least open-minded, the fact that there could be extraterrestrial life out there and that it may possibly be visiting Earth. And see, for me, that's enough for me, for most scientists. They don't have to believe. They don't have to know E.T. is visiting the planet. All they really have to understand is it's quite possible that something is visiting this planet, and maybe we should take a better look into it. So, anyway, let's go ahead. We're going to play this little Dark Skies clip, and then we're going to go ahead and play the second part of the hypnosis. So hold on one second, and we'll be right back.
Dark Skies.
John Loengard, Congressional Investigator. My new title was a great Christmas present. Unfortunately, the reality was something else. Flying saucer evidence could largely be explained away as either low-flying planes or faked photos. Most of the witnesses I interviewed were simply crazy people craving attention. Then I met Betty and Barney Hill.
Mrs. Hill?
Yes.
Hi, I'm John Loengard. I just came from Peace Air Force Base. And
no, please, I really wish you people would leave us alone.
No, Mrs. Hill, I don't work with the Air Force. Remember, we talked over the phone. I'm with Congressman Charles Pratt's office.
Oh, yes.
Look, if you feel like talking, my girlfriend baked this fruitcake for us.
Is there a problem here?
Oh, no, sir. I was just telling your wife here that there's some new information about the sighting you reported.
If all of this is true, then why do you need a cake to talk your way in here?
Well, sir, that's a good point. Probably was a pretty dumb idea. Look, I'll be honest with you. I was sent out to prove that the Air Force investigation is a waste of money. But right now, let's just say I've got an open mind. And the truth is, this is a damn good cake.
We were returning from a vacation in Canada, down US 3 through the White Mountains to Portsmouth. It was after midnight, pretty close to a full moon. There weren't many cars, and any place to stay was already closed.
I saw it first. It looked like a big light that was following us. And then when I looked through the binoculars, I saw a double row of windows. Real windows.
I thought she was crazy, but she made me stop the car anyway. I went out into a field with the binoculars. When I looked through those windows, I saw about a half dozen living beings looking back at me.
You mean people?
I mean living beings.
Well, what did you do then?
I panicked. I thought I was going to be captured, so I ran as fast as I could back to the car.
Were you actually captured?
We don't know what happened. The next thing we know, we're back in our car, but it's 2 hours later.
Wait till the congressman hears this. I don't see how he can ignore this.
Well, I think he should do one of those congressional investigations.
That's what I think he should do.
I don't know about that. You see, you'd probably have to testify, and, well, people might say things.
I'm a black man married to a white woman. People already say things. If I can find out what the hell it is I saw and where I was, I would tell my story to the whole damn world.
I think that Betty and Barney actually did have a close encounter with an unconventional flying object in New Hampshire's White Mountains. I know from the original reports and from being there in the very beginning, being at their house within 2 days, from the descriptions that Betty and Barney gave to my parents, that they had conscious recollection of seeing this craft at less than 100 feet, hovering less than 100 feet silently above their vehicle. This was clearly an unconventional aircraft. Barney had conscious recollection of observing non-human entities in this vehicle in the field. He was greatly frightened by this. Something started to drop down out of the bottom of the craft. He was afraid he was going to be captured. They had conscious recollection of two series of beeping or buzzing sounds on the trunk of the vehicle as they sped down Route 3 in New Hampshire, the major north-south route in 1961, the craft in pursuit. This beeping and buzzing sound caused the car to vibrate, and it caused this feeling of tingling feeling to pass through Betty's and Barney's bodies and caused them to feel sleepy.
We're talking with Betty Hill, famous and first abductee. September 19, 1961, Betty, while driving with her husband Barney, was heading south from Canada.
Right.
When very early in the morning, you saw a strange light behind the car. It was September 19th. But what time was that, Betty, that this light behind the car appeared?
Well, we had crossed over the border into New Hampshire. And I think we started to see this light following. Actually, in the very beginning, I noticed a bright light in the sky, and I thought I was discovering a new planet until it started to move. And this was about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. So we stopped the car and got out, just
see what this... We thought it was a plane. So we stopped the car to get out to look at it. And that's when it changed direction and started coming in towards us. Now, that was in about the Lancaster area.
So,
and then it followed us for about 30 miles. Paced our car.
And all the while, you and Barney were discussing it. What is this? What is that?
Yes, Barney did in World War II. He knew planes. And he's trying to identify this. And it's flying in a very erratic manner, which was very puzzling to us. But this is 61. We'd heard UFO. Well, actually, in those days, they called them flying saucers. We had no idea what a flying saucer looked like. But we had no fear, just curiosity. We were trying to identify this craft.
You go on in the road. You decide to pull over. Barney gets out of the car.
Actually, that was in the Indian Head area.
Okay. Am I preceding something here when you encountered alien entities, or was this after?
No, this is the next step.
Okay.
In the Indian Head area, I'm trying to attract the attention of this craft. I'm telling it, come on in. Hi. I got the window down. I'm yelling to it. Hi, hi. Who are you? My cap fell off the stool. And at that point, it left the top of the mountain, came out over the highway, and stopped in midair directly in front of us, maybe about 50 feet in the sky. So Barney got out with the binoculars in an attempt to identify the craft. And when he looked up, he saw a circular window with a bright light behind it, and he saw these men standing behind the window looking down at him. And at that point, the craft began to descend. And he became frightened. Ran back to the car, saying he thought they were trying to capture him. So we got in the car, and we went speeding down the highway to avoid capture. And as we're driving along, there's beeping sounds. That sounds like something was hitting the trunk of the car, and the car vibrated. And then we drove along for about another 30 miles, when Barney turned off onto a side road, and here was a group of men he'd seen on the craft standing in the middle of this road, blocking our way. And naturally, he had to stop the car. And they came up in two groups, took us out of the car, back in the woods to where the craft was on the ground.
At that point, strange thoughts started going through your head, thoughts that weren't your own. Did you have some sort of telepathic communication with these entities, or?
Our communication was verbal.
Verbal?
Right.
Oh, interesting.
Yep. They spoke English in a limited way.
Huh.
Like, a foreigner coming here and not too well acquainted with our language.
But in the same time, using common colloquialisms of the day, like, you'll be back in no time or something of that ilk.
Well, in the very first part, they had us under some kind of control. And I brought myself out of this, but Barney was only able to bring himself partly out of it. So I was just as conscious as I am right now.
They walk you into the craft up a ramp, the landed craft. This is right off Route 3. Well, actually, you didn't know where you were at that point.
Right off Route 3.
So they walk you up this ramp. You brought in, and what did they say they were going to do with you?
Well, when we got up to the door, I was not going to go in. So I socked them.
You punched the entity?
Yeah. In fact, I put up such a battle that my dress is badly torn. And he said, come on. All we want to do is some simple tests. And as soon as the tests are over, we'll take you back to your car and you'll be on your way.
Let's just go back to those type of entities. They were your classic alien, gray-shaped, cat-like... No, they weren't. Okay.
They were a form of human being.
They were a form of human being.
Right.
Did they have cat-like or Cheshire-like eyes?
They had larger eyes than ours. Smaller nose and smaller mouth. No protruding part of the ear and no hair.
So
not people.
Nothing like these classic grays you see your Whitley Strievers.
I've never seen those. I don't know what they're talking about.
Sure, okay. There was a leader of...
Well, we gave them different names to identify. Now, I don't know if he was the leader or the interpreter, but we called him the leader. And then there was the one who did the testing. We called him the examiner. There were nine others who stayed out in the corridor, and we called them the crew members.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're on board. What do you remember what you saw when you entered the craft? Did something must have taken you aback, saying, this is amazing, or what type of craft am I inside? Can you describe as to what you collectively remember?
Now, one end to a corridor, and then I was taken into a room, and I had to step up because the floor, level of the floor, was above the corridor, and it was an oval-shaped door like we would see on a ship.
Do you remember at that point, did they specify what their agenda at that point was? Were you going immediately in for the examination, or...?
They had taken us strictly to... Actually, they wanted to find out how we were like them or different from them, physically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you feel that you were chosen for this, or you happened to be in the wrong area at the wrong time, or the right area at the right time?
Well, now I figure it was the right time, mm-hmm. in the right area. But I think we... I brought it on myself. You know, I'm waving to them and yelling to them, and who are you? And,
you get into the examination room. You're separated from Barney.
Right. He's taken into the second room.
Your examination, and again, all this comes out in later dreams and hypnosis, but immediately do they remove your clothes and perform... What happens? You'll have to... I'm tainted by all the popular lore of abduction stories. What do they do?
I don't know anything about those stories.
That's good. Well, you're better off.
But I was taken into this first room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite bare. There was a small table. There was a stool. And then the wall, the door, there were doors in the wall that would slide back and forth. And they put me on a stool, checked my eyes, ears, nose, throat, my feet, my hands. And then he put me on a table and said they were going to check my nervous system. And they used some kind of equipment to do this. And then he tried to insert a needle-like instrument in my navel, which caused pain. So they stopped doing it. And then the examiner left and went into the room where Barney was.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe what was happening to Barney, what Barney recalled under hypnosis? What was going on at the same time in his examination room?
With Barney, most of the exam was the same as mine, except they were interested in his bone structure. I mean, they were feeling all up and down his spine, his arms and all, basically.
Did Barney recall any struggle akin to the struggle that you had, where you had a torn dress?
No, because they had him under this control.
Okay.
He was... was very upsetting to him because he couldn't move.
Mm-hmm. So they had implemented paralysis, some sort of temporary paralysis on Barney to subdue him, whereas to you they gave you a little more leeway as far as you weren't...
Well, I was smaller than Barney, mm-hmm. so I didn't get such a big dose of paralysis.
So they saw him as more of a fear, perhaps,
than
you.
He was bigger than them.
Okay. Your examination concludes. Then what happens?
Well... The examiner is in doing Barney's exam. I started talking with the leader. And I said, I know you're not from this planet. Where are you from? And he showed me a star map. And he explained part of the map to me briefly. And then we just talked about food and different aspects of life here.
That was a little strange. Let's turn it down so I don't have to hear myself talk. That was kind of weird. So what do y'all think, guys? I mean, y'all were listening to... Now, this was interview, I believe, was done in 1999. She still sounded like she had her wits about her pretty good. She was talking pretty good there. Sounds like she's honest, straightforward. Thing about it is, though, one, I noticed every interview I've ever heard her talk about, it's about her. It's not about Barney, it's about her. That's always a bad sign. It just is. And you know, you heard her talk about, there's actually more detail on some other shows they did in the early days about what went on in the exam rooms. But if you listen, I mean, she's talking about stools and tables. When she was forced to give a description, it was like one of those stainless steel spinning stools with a metal table. This, you know, sliding doors. This is typical terrestrial-type technologies. And it is technologies you would find, like, on a Navy ship or on a different type of craft that would be moving around. It's hard to say what the hell it was. Most of what she describes does sound like terrestrial technology, paperback books. To this day, I got to be honest about this. This is the only time I've ever heard about anybody talk about a paperback book or a paper book on a spacecraft of any kind. I've heard them talk about great libraries, but the library's information was assimilated in different ways, not in a paper book form. A lot of really advanced stuff. I don't really remember anybody else. Now, I've heard of written stuff, okay, but not like in book form, like in scroll form or something like that, or in a form written on the ship or written on a wall or written something like that. Well, yeah, that just proves my point about the Aurora craft, that it was a airship that we crashed. I don't know why it's such a hard time for people to understand we crashed a blimp in Aurora, Texas. Oh, man, probably some type of new technology, some other type of drive system on it. I don't know, but anytime you hear about paperback books, that's a red flag right off the bat. One, because of the amount of storage. Think about a spacecraft. Would you really want to bring paperback books on a spacecraft? It takes up a lot of storage space that you could just put on a Kindle type thing, you know. You could put 10,000 books on a Kindle. So, I mean, it doesn't make sense to me an advanced race that could come here that would be doing it that way. I'm sorry, guys. That sounds like government or somebody leaving one of their books laying around or something, or some type of book for whatever they were working on or a board or things like that. But it just doesn't sound like a real book. And then I'm kind of curious about the binocular thing. The guys walking around in the craft. One, the way they describe the windows sounds like on a ship deck. That's a typical type. I've seen those windows myself that I thought might have been alien, but I've also seen them on carriers and destroyers and other ships. Those are typical. What's funny about that is those kind of windows probably aren't real good for space travel, but doesn't mean they weren't real. It's just kind of funny. And then I'm kind of curious about what type of binoculars they were, how far the craft was away, things like that. You know, could you really make out figures or was it shadows? And I'm just curious. But, you know, the stainless, the metal tables and the chairs and the sliding doors, the needles, these are all terrestrial technologies, the paper books, terrestrial, again, technology, steps that they physically walked up. Terrestrial technologies. There's just not a lot of extraterrestrial technology involved in the Betty and Barney Hill case in New Hampshire. So I really do think it was the first known about MILAB case. I really think the abduction happened in Canada and the MILAB happened in the United States. They just got lucky. And they knew they were coming back and they somehow or another knew something happened, so they snatched their asses. Maybe they were watching them. Obviously, it's quite possible they were watching them because, I mean, we know that the Air Force guy was living there. We know they were friends with the other Air Force guy. We know they had ties to other military people. And what a lot of people don't realize about this, because you always see Kathleen Maldren and him saying, oh, well, they got hypnotized, and they just come right out with the story. But that's not the truth. It was 2 years before they got hypnotized. And remember, Betty was reading everything she could find about UFOs and extraterrestrials. So 2 years of absorbing whatever the knowledge of the day was and then getting hypnotized. Ooh, see, that's a flag right there. Doesn't mean it doesn't take anything away from the case. It's just a flag. Because the hypnosis guy, the guy Simon's doing hypnosis, would not have been familiar with that type of material. He would not have been familiar with what they were reading or who they were involved with. So therefore, he wouldn't even know how to judge it. And then there's some other stuff, you know, like they didn't know where they stayed or how they got there and stuff like that. So, and then to reiterate this, there is a lot of what we would consider physical technology. But I have to stress this. I don't want people to misunderstand this. I do think they were abducted in Canada by real aliens. I just think who got them in New Hampshire was the government. I mean, it's just because of the way they describe the equipment. Or maybe it was the other way around, but somewhere in there, there are real descriptions of extraterrestrials, but there's also real descriptions of what we would consider not just terrestrial technology, but terrestrial technology of the day. You see what I'm saying? There weren't any of these electronic pads anywhere or any of these wall-mounted screens or anything or any, you know, because on a craft today, well, let me put it another way. On a craft in the 70s, maybe even the 60s, they would have probably had this type of type of technology along these ways. Because remember, everybody forgets, but the real government is supposed to be 75 to 100 years more advanced than the general population. So this is 2014. If we've got iPads in 2014, that means they had to have iPads in the 50s or 60s, maybe the 70s. And everybody forgets, the fastest jet ever built was built in the 50s, or I'm sorry, in the 60s. And it's still the fastest jet ever built today. It also was stealth. So all of that stuff comes into play. There was a lot more going on in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s era than most people gave credit to. And it was also an awful lot of abduction activity through those decades in a different form than what we would consider today. So I have no doubt that this was probably the first scheduled MILAM. And they were watching this guy. And they said, look, we got him. We know he's been taken. Let's pick him up and see what we can find. And from the type of examination and the questions being asked, that's what it sounds like. And the fact that they spoke aloud, and they spoke English aloud. I don't know. Anyway, let's go back. We're going to get another one of the hypnosis tapes. But remember, in between the tapes, if you'd like to call in, 504-273-7379, the lines are open. Just when we're in a tape, you might as well wait till it's over. And you can always write to me about what you think the sincerity of the Hills or Barney was when you're listening to these tapes. I know we're going to have a hard time getting through everything I wanted to get through tonight, but let's go ahead and cue this one up and get it rolling on down the road here.
Calm now. Relax. Deeply relax. Deeply relaxed. You will not have to make any outcry. But you can remember it now. Keep remembering. You feel you have to get your gun. This is going to harm you, you felt.
I open the trunk of my car. Then I get it. Then I get back in the car.
All right. Just keep reasonably calm.
Then I put it in my coat. And then I get out with the binoculars, and it is there. And I look, and I look, and it shifts over, and I think, I'm not afraid. I'll shoot it down if I'm not afraid. And I walk out. And I walk across the road. There it is, up there. Oh, God,
right.
There it is.
Right. Calm down. Calm down. It's there, but you can see it, but it's not going to hurt you. Go on.
Why doesn't it go away? Look at it. It's the man there.
Calm. It's not going to hurt you.
There's a man. And the captain, what is he? You got to look at me.
Just a minute. Let's go back a little bit now. You say it's there. Did you say it was 1,000 feet away?
Oh, no.
1,000 yards?
It doesn't look that far. It's very big. And it's not that far. And I can see it tilted toward me.
Tilted? And what does it look like now when you say tilted? Did you see wings?
Looks like a big, big pancake with windows and rows of windows and lights of not light, just one huge light.
And rows of windows like a commercial plane?
Rows of windows. They're not like a commercial plane because they curve around to the size of this pancake. And I say, my God, no, I have to shake my head. I got to, it can't be true. This isn't there. It's still there. And I look up and down the road. Can't somebody come and tell me this is not there? It can't be. And it's all...
You're still asleep, but you can see it all clearly.
It's there.
You sure it's there?
Yeah.
You weren't having a dream?
It's there.
You've had no sleep that evening?
I touch my right arm. It's not my right, it's my left arm. And then I touch my right arm, and it is my left arm. I'm confused.
You're clear now. You're relaxed.
It's still there. If I let my binoculars fall and dangle from my neck and then start over again, maybe it won't be there. But it is. Why? What do they want? What do they want? One person looks friendly. He's friendly looking, and he's looking at me over his right shoulder, and he's smiling.
You see him clearly?
Yes, I thought.
What's his face like? What does it make you think of?
It's round. I think of a red-haired Irishman. I don't know why, but I think I know why. Because Irish are usually hostile to Negroes. And when I see a friendly Irish person, I react to it by thinking I will be friendly. And I think this one that is looking over his shoulder is friendly.
You say looking over his shoulder. Was he facing away from you?
Yes, he was facing a wall. And
you saw him through this window? You said there was a row of windows.
It was a row of windows. Just a huge row of windows, only divided by struts or structures that prevented it from being one solid window. Or then it would have been one solid window. And the evil face on the looks like a German Nazi.
He is a Nazi. Did he have on a uniform?
Yes.
What kind of uniform?
It was black. He had a black scarf around his neck, dangling over his left shoulder.
You pointed it out as if it were on you.
I never noticed that before.
He had a black scarf on his neck. How could you see these figures so clearly at that distance?
I was looking at it with binoculars.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Did they have faces like other people? You say one reminded you of a red-headed Irishman.
His eyes were slanted. I see it so. His eyes were slanted. But not like a Chinese.
What was Betty doing all this time?
I'm not close to her. I don't know.
You're out there by yourself, huh? You don't think of her. Is she saying anything?
I can't hear her.
Did you make any outcry to her, the way you did to me?
I can't remember. I don't know. I did not.
You would remember it if you did.
I did not. But I know this creature, this leader is telling me something.
He's telling you something. How? How is he getting it to you?
I can see it.
Sorry, guys, I was typing to somebody right as it ended. I apologize for that. So you hear what Barney's saying. I mean, y'all can listen to the tape for yourself. So, I mean, what do you think? Does he sound legit? Barney, to me, sounds legit. I'm not going to lie to you. I think the man had been taken. I'm skeptical about some stuff, but, you know, nothing that would convince me that he's not a contactee. But I still believe that – I believe Barney's been a lifelong abductee. I got to be honest about that. I think Betty was there by accident. And I think the reason they did what they did with Betty, this is also another argument to prove that I'm right here, but Barney was treated differently when he was taken. And it was not just that. If you listen to Barney in the tapes, he'll talk about that more. Some of this stuff was pretty harsh on Barney. Betty, it seemed like she was more along the lines of being entertained. Like, you know, the guys knew, well, you know, look, she's not the one we're after. This is the one who we're after. This is the one who had this stuff really happen to him. Because we do know, and many, I've heard at least 5 radio shows in the 70s when they talk about nail and skin and fluid samples, so, which I didn't hear her talking about tonight. Of course, that was a 1999 interview, too, so. But still, those are there. So it's just something to think about. I know I'd seen the conversation with the room going earlier about, I'll tell you this much. I don't know about the humans for sure. I've never heard anybody describe doors and the way we think of swinging doors on any spaceship, any mothership, or any base for that matter. They're usually either opened, and then when you go in, like a screen comes across them, or they just blend in from the wall. They're just there. They just open up and they just close and there's nothing there. Depends which ship you're talking about but and which type of aliens you're talking about. But I've never heard any conventional doors sliding, opening, or otherwise on a spacecraft of any kind dealing with extraterrestrials in all my years of doing this. So just thought I would say that. I can't say that on the air, Jason, and shame on you, man. Shame on that comment. Just shame, shame, shame.
Sorry, there's an inappropriate comment in the chat room that I cannot repeat on the air because I'm sure I get 5 million emails over it. But it is kind of a point. The thing about this case is, I don't know why they always wanted to focus on Betty. Maybe because Betty had the mouth. But Barney was the contactee. There's way more than enough evidence to suggest he was the contactee. And it sounds like he was having the Gray's experience, the typical experience that you hear, usually a little younger than this. So that's kind of bothered me. But it does seem like that. I mean, it really does. And I really want to say that I really feel if in this case Betty was just brought along for the ride. I think they were taken wherever they were taken in Canada, and then when they were taken here, they were mil-labbed. And by the way, just so you know this, we have military abduction cases where the spouse is brought in with the abductee and treated in kind of that same fashion where, like, oh, we'll sit here, stay here, this will be over soon, don't worry about it. Yeah, nothing really bad's happening, blah, 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 blah. And so it's not even the first time we've heard this. It just seems to be a progression down the line. And it makes me wonder why these researchers have such a hard time with this. Really and truly, if you really look at the Hill case, what you have here is a legitimate lifetime long abductee who had made friends with military people along the line, had made connections in politics, which was probably due to from his very first psychiatrist he ever seen as well. Because you've got to remember, back in the 50s, this shit was taken more seriously than it is today. If you went into a psychologist and you reported certain things, they liable to have got reported to the Air Force. Remember, they had programs looking for this. Was it Project Grudge or Project Science at the time? Because Blue Book was a little bit later, which they're mentioned in Blue Book as well. So all of this was going on back then. So there's a lot of credence that the government wanted to know what was going on. So it's not beyond the fact that the government wouldn't have taken citizens of the United States and done these kind of things to them. And what better case can you get? Betty Barnhill was the perfect subjects for this because they were an interracial couple. They were already being criticized, so this was not going to do any more harm than anything else would have. It also got them in the limelight a lot more and in the public a lot more. Of course, it got them in as people who had been taken by aliens, but it still got them into the limelight. And I didn't see anybody out there trying to kill them because they were a black and white couple or anything along those lines. So you just got to kind of look at what was going on here. And I forgot the guy's name, Pierce Pace. He was a major in the Air Force. That's who Betty, there was a personal friend of theirs. That's who they had contacted and talked with. Remember, this bounced around for 2 years between conventions and other stuff before they got regressed. And then you heard what Carl Sagan said about the star map, and I've been saying about the star map for years. Man, you give me – look, anybody could draw me a map right now. Within an hour, I could match it to a group of stars or a constellation in the sky. That's not a big thing. I mean, come on. There's literally trillions of stars out there. It's not real hard to draw lines to make something look the same. That kind of aggravated me a little bit, to be honest with you, that someone like Stanton Friedman would try to put that map over on us. That always did bother me, man. I thought that took a little bit of his credibility away, but I don't want to hate on a guy because I like the old guy. He's a good guy, but still, you know, that was, I just thought that was cheesy. Oh, well, we did the dress 30 years later. Yeah, well, you could say anything. That's totally useless. Anything, you know, even weeks after the fact is useless. And then the fact that they waited so long to get regressed. And it's not the fact that it took them 2 years to get regressed, because some people go 10, 20 years. It's all the shit in between. Most people, when I meet them that want me to regress them, they're just starting to realize something's going on in life. They really haven't started reading or understanding. You know that's a no-no to me. I tell people who are starting to awaken not to go reading shit on the Internet. Okay, look for pointed stuff, get with the support groups, and work with other contactees. But don't fool your head full of bullshit until you kind of have an idea what's going on in your own life. Because it makes you hear this story or that story or this story or that story, you don't know what to think. Then it starts making people paranoid or scared or upset or thinking that they're the chosen one or some shit. Regardless, none of it's correct, and we really, it's something we have to work on as researchers to kind of stabilize that side of the field. I-Corps does a good job of, but I can't do that. You have to remind me, I got to call Christina Knowles. I seen a call from her today. She's up there in Massachusetts all by her lonesome up there working hard. I want to get back in touch with her. I'll try to remember to do that tomorrow. Christina, if you listen tonight, I will try to give you a call sometime tomorrow and catch up with you. If not, holler at me a couple times during the day. I got a kind of weird schedule, so I'll have my phone with me. Anyway, moving on. Doing work on the radio. We're going to play one more segment, and then we'll see where we're going to go from that, because it is already 9 o'clock, and I want to kind of get this wrapped up by about 9:30. I really wanted to get all five of these segments, and I really wanted to get in the Emma Woods and the David Jacobs stuff. Maybe not. Maybe next week, maybe the week after. Or maybe somebody. We'll see what's going on. But this is some stuff I've been wanting to do. There's a couple of shows I want to do like this, but there's a couple of guests I got to get out the way, and there's a couple of people I need to bring on the show because I've been being mean and ignoring guests this year. So, hey, man, it's been a long time since I've been doing radio. I rarely just ignore guests, but I got to get back on that somewhat too. But there's a couple more clip shows I want to do. I want to finish out the Betty and Barney Hill thing and some David Jacobs stuff I want to do. There's a couple of more famous cases that I want to walk through, like the Travis Walton case, along with Rendlesham at the same time, and just kind of put an official spin on where we sit on those cases. But anyway, let me cue this clip up right quick. Whoever wrote that, yes, the archive will be up. Excuse me. About 10, 15 minutes after we're done. So let's play this clip here. Drop this up.
Space.
Do you see the lips move?
Yes.
No, his lips aren't moving.
Yes, go on. He's telling you.
He's looking at me.
What did he tell you?
Stay there and keep looking. Just keep looking and stay there. And just keep looking. Just keep looking.
Could you hear him tell
you? Oh, I got to pull these binoculars away from my eyes. Because if I don't, I'll just keep staying there.
Could you hear him tell you this?
Oh, no. He didn't say it.
You felt he said it.
I know.
You know he said it.
Just there, yeah. Just stay there, he's saying to me.
Yes, all right.
I'll dig in my head. Just
all right.
Pull
all
the binoculars away. God, give me strength.
All right.
Pull him down! Run! Pull his arms down and run! God! If there's a God, give me sense. I gotta get away. Oh! Oh! Betty!
All right.
Gotta get away, Betty!
Alright. Calm down.
I'm tired.
Gotta
get away.
Oh. How could you be sure he was telling you this? Calm down. You're still asleep.
Oh.
How could you be sure he was telling you this?
His eyes. I've never seen his eyes before.
But you said they were friendly. You said they were friendly.
Oh, God. Not the leaders. I said, honey, he wasn't looking over his shoulder.
Oh, I see. The leader was the...
friendly.
How did you know the other one was the leader?
Because everybody moved. Everyone was standing there looking at me. But everybody moved to these levers or in the back, or they went to this big board. They looked like it looked like a board. And only this one with the black shiny jacket and the scarf stayed at the window. I'm driving.
You going back into the car now?
Yes.
You put down your binoculars, did you?
I got them down.
Yes. And you got into the car. Did you speak to Betty?
Getting a hold of myself. I'm saying, hold to myself. Don't panic. You better wait.
22. You drive the car. Told Betty to look out. The object was still around us. I could feel it around us. I saw it when we passed by. The object, when I got into the car, it had swung around so that it was out there. I knew it was out there. Well, it's out there. I know Route 3. Those eyes. They're there in my brain. Oh, please. Can I wake up?
Stay asleep a little longer.
Oh.
We'll get through this now, all right.
Everything.
We'll get through it, all right. All your feelings, tell me. They won't upset you so much.
They're there. Isn't that funny? Out of the woods.
Yes.
That crazy dog. She stays in the car all the time. Isn't that funny? She stays in the car.
She doesn't bark, do anything?
She just stays there.
What about Betty?
I don't know.
Isn't she saying anything?
Oh. I don't understand. Are we being robbed?
Makes you think you're being robbed.
I know what's in my mind and I don't want to say it.
Well, you can say it to me. You can say it now.
They're men. All with black jackets. And I don't have any money. I don't have anything. I don't know. The eyes are there. Always the eyes are there. And they're telling me. I don't have to be afraid. Is there an accident down the road? What's the red? The bright red.
Bright red?
Yeah.
What is that?
Orange and red.
Where is that?
Right down the road.
Down the road.
And I don't have to be afraid. But they won't talk to me.
Who won't talk to you?
The men.
In the vehicle?
No, they are standing in the road.
And where are you? You're in the car?
No. I'm just suspended. I'm just floating about. Oh, how funny. Float about.
All right, guys. Well, there's two more in that set, but we're not going to be getting them tonight. We'll save them for either next week or the week after. When the next time we do this, we'll finish up the Betty and Barney Hill stuff, discuss it a little bit deeper, get into it on what may be real abduction, what may be Millab, what may be something else. Then maybe we'll get into a little bit of the Emma Wood stuff and go from there. Maybe we might do the Travis Walter. Who knows? We'll see where we are. Anyway, I wanted to bring that up right quick. I hope y'all enjoyed it. I mean, it's not stuff we get to do often, once or twice a year. Sometimes, actually, last time we did these kind of clips, it's probably been about 2 years, maybe 3 years now. But this way that people can get the facts for themselves and make it their own minds. I mean, y'all hear me talk about it. Y'all hear Kathleen Mollison talk about it. Y'all heard Barney Hill talk about it. Pretty much every researcher that anybody's talked about the Betty and Barney Hill case. So, but rarely do they give you the option to make up your own mind. They want you to believe what they want you to believe. If you want to believe what I feel about it, it's fine. If you want to believe what the Hills feel about it, it's fine. I just want you to make up your own mind, and that's the whole reason for what we played tonight. I also wanted to play the Carl Sagan stuff because everybody says, "Oh, well, y'all are always pro." No, we're not always pro. So I wanted to hear that as well, so you could hear what he had to say about it. And we'll try to do a little bit more of that in the future, bring in a little bit heavier skeptics, but skeptics might be a better word. But anyway, we're going to get out of here tonight. I want to tell everyone thanks for tuning into the Joe Montalvo Show. I hope you really enjoyed the 2 hours of the show tonight. There's a lot of good material in there. We will be coming back. I was just talking with Margie about getting her on in the near future, too, so we'll see when she's going to come visit with us. And a couple other people besides that. But I do want to get back to this segment. I'd like to get this finished up either next week or the week after. Do you see? Well, you can come on. We'll do yours too. Don. So we'd like to get that done as well. So I'm looking for. I'm gonna bring Mattis on and hypnotize Mattis on the air. Yes, I've decided she needs. Her and Jules need therapy soon. Yes, yes. You're getting sleepy, Mattis. Actually, I'll do it correctly. Breathing exercises first. We'll get you. Toes tingling and your fingers tingling. We'll work it up through your calves, up through your thighs, up through your glutes, into your back, up through your chest, down into your arms, into your heart, into your head, and then out into the world where we can all see it. I'm just teasing. I've already had that happen. Thank you very much. That just causes trouble in my life. Thank you very much. That's all it does. But really and truly, I want to do some online regression, but with people I've worked with, and because I feel, excuse me, I would just feel more comfortable that way. I don't like doing hypnosis over. It's not so much over the air as it is. I don't like doing it over the internet in case something goes wacky. Sometimes in intense regressions. When we get into deep-rooted stuff, sometimes shit happens, and I would rather be there. You know, it's the only way I can explain it. I mean, I know y'all have heard me talk about other regressions we've done in the past, and hell, one of them destroyed a Hi-8 videotape. It just magnetically wiped the whole thing. It didn't wipe the tapes because they were in a separate case, but it ruined the camera and whatever tape was in it. So then we get all kind of weird shit like that happen. So sometimes a contactee freaks out. Sometimes other things happen. Sometimes things go on. I just like to physically be there. It makes me feel better. Matter of fact, I found something the other day that I got a mail off to a friend of mine. She was so thrilled that it only took her 4 years to get them. 8 millimeter, huh? 19 8mm. You know, I might even still have one of them old reel-to-reel 8mm somewhere. You know, I did find, I got a 600-watt Akaya reel-to-reel stereo, all-tube, classic all-tube. Oh, yeah, this thing will blow your eardrums out of the house. Of course, I don't have much to play on it anymore. I got one reel-to-reel tape left that's got some classic 80s, 70s, 80s, and early 90s rock on it. Some of it good, some of it like, Anyway, we're going to get out of here. I want to thank everyone to tune into the Joe Montana Show. I hope you really enjoy it. Any moans, groans, gripes, bitches, and complaints? Right to Stephanie Benetti. Anyway, y'all, I hope y'all enjoyed the show. Good night, everybody.
To manage yourself. That is the whole purpose of the...
We have opinions on
that our family, what I'd really like to point out is that our family had a very